Hey, it's Melvin. Before we jump into today's podcast session, if your private practice income feels unpredictable, here's one simple shift. Keep your private pay clients and just add one insurance panel for stability. Alma makes it easy for you to do that. You can try it free for 2 months over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. sellingthecouch.com/Alma. Hello, hello. Welcome to today's session of Selling the Couch. I hope you are doing well and having an awesome day. Today's topic is one that most of us don't want to really think about, but it's such an essential topic, which is basically what happens to our private practices if we either pass away or we get incapacitated in some capacity. I am joined by Dr. Robin Miller. Robin is a licensed psychologist and also the founder of TheraClosure, which is a company that helps clinicians in private practice set up professional wills and actually manage all of the things related to continuity of care, security of medical records, all of that kind of stuff after we pass. To be completely honest, I've heard of a professional will. I didn't understand what it is, but it's after this conversation, I almost feel like any clinician I will see, I have to be like, you need to like think about this because, and I mean, I may not want to, but it's such an essential thing. So we start our conversation with what prompted Robin after 25 plus years in private practice, to start TheraClosure. It's a really personal story of losing a colleague who was in their late 40s and having to navigate all of the stuff around caring for that colleague's, the continuity of care for their clients, for the medical records, and all of these things. And we talk about what exactly a professional will it is, how that looks different for a solo practitioner versus a group practice owner. We also talk into this conversation around how should therapists think about a professional will if they either plan to retire, wind down, or sell their practice. And we get into the most common mistakes that therapists make when it comes to professional wills, besides not having one. And what is the ideal time to actually think about a professional will? Is it when you start a practice? Is it once you've hit a certain revenue, maybe a certain age, all of that stuff? I think this is a really, really practical conversation on professional wills. And one of the things I most appreciated about Robin is she put it in a language that's like easy for us as clinicians to understand, because I know for many of us, when we sometimes hear like legal language, we gloss over and we're like, I don't even know what's happening, or we get really overwhelmed. But I think this is a really practical conversation. So here's my conversation with Dr. Robin Miller from TheraClosure.com. Hey, Robin, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Mel, thank you so much for having me. I'm such a big fan and it's so exciting to be here with you.
And look, we're like down the road on 95. So we're like, you know, different states, but neighbors.
Road trip buddies.
That's right. That's right. I'm genuinely excited for our conversation. I'm so thankful you reached out on LinkedIn. The amazing stuff you guys are doing at TheraClosure, thinking about professional wills. I would imagine most therapists are not thinking about professional wills, but I feel like every clinician in private practice needs to be thinking about it. So this is admittedly an area that I don't know much about. So I'm so excited to learn from you, to pick your brain, and have a great conversation.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're a licensed psychologist. You're the founder of TheraClosure. What's your story? Why do professional wills matter to you?
So I've been in private practice for almost 25 years, and that is my love. And this is an unexpected route for me that started almost 8 years ago when my very closest psychologist friend and peer supervision partner of 17 years got sick and died very quickly. And I stepped in to handle her practice. And it was an incredibly gut-wrenching time, and taking care of her bereaved clients who are now in crisis was really hard as I was managing my own grief and loss. And so it really just taught me how much is involved, how overwhelming it is, and that there are so many details that no one ever thinks of that are problematic if they aren't addressed ahead of time. I actually then had a second friend have a crisis, and I stepped in for her as well. And then as I started writing about it and heard from colleagues, like, whoa, I've never heard of this. I don't know who would handle this for me. That prompted the creation of TheraClosure as a solution.
It's amazing. This is like one of those circumstances I feel like we often hear about, right? But we never quite sometimes connected, like, oh, this could actually happen to me, or I could be in a situation like this.
Our defenses work. You know, we don't want to think about this, but I have come to believe that as clinicians who really pride ourselves in going into dark spaces, shame, rage, that we have to acknowledge our own mortality and the impact on the people who rely on us. And it's part of our not only ethical and legal, but clinical responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to even start at the 40,000 foot view. For someone that's hearing this for this term, professional will, for the first time, what exactly is a professional will?
So professional will is a written document that outlines what you as the clinician would want for your professional responsibilities, how you would want them to be handled if something were to happen to you. So it addresses primarily the responsibilities of planning for continuing care for your clients. How would they be notified and how would they be assisted with referrals? And for the security of medical records. So who would take custody of those medical records? Who would inform your clients where their medical records are? Because in every state, they have the right to access their medical records. So we have to let them know where they can be found. And those are the primary responsibilities. There are many other aspects of practice that can be included, but this is a written document that says, I want my personal next of kin to turn to my colleague who I'm going to name as my practice executor, and I want them to fulfill all of these professional responsibilities, and here are the instructions and the ways to access the private information that you need, and it's all here in writing. It's important to note that technically, a professional will is usually not a legal document. It is not a contract. It is a wish list. So you are writing in hopes that the person that you've asked will do this for you, but it's not legally binding, and it is not your last will and testament. It doesn't cover your assets. It's really about your professional responsibilities.
Again, I will ask a lot of really silly questions. Is there a way to make it legally binding, or is that just the nature of it where it's almost like a wish list?
The templates that can be found online and the way most people approach it, if they approach it, and my research has shown that probably less than 30% actually do this, even though it's in the ethics codes of all the disciplines and written in law in many states. It is not a contract. You can make it a legal contract, and with our process, we have made it a legally binding contract so that we are required by law to fulfill the obligations that we have agreed to take on regarding someone else's practice and record retention and all of those responsibilities.
So interesting. Does a professional will, does it look different for like a solo practitioner versus a group practitioner? I imagine there's probably some nuances there.
There are some differences. For solo, you are alone, and nobody else probably knows who your clients are and how to find them and knows your system and your billing and your access and all of those things. So those clients are really in particular risk for being abandoned and not having anyone, even if your family or your friends have the best of intentions, they don't know who or how to notify. So those folks are really at risk, and it is incumbent on solo practitioners to have a very clear plan outlined and who identify who is going to help you with this. Group practices, it depends. If you are a large structure with a pretty formal internal structure and organization, or even the larger organizations themselves, there is probably some internal policy for who would then notify the clients, and that there's an administrative support, and there's other clinicians who could probably absorb those clients within. So you're a little bit better off ahead of time as a group practice, but it is really important for group practice owners to clarify with their staff members who owns the records. Is it the practice, or is it your contractor? Who is responsible for notifying and assisting with referrals if something were to happen? If something happens to the practice owner, what is your plan? How is anyone going to get access to the bank account to do payroll for your staff, to pay the rent, so that everybody under you doesn't have to immediately cease practice because you aren't there to do those things? So there are layers of responsibility that need to be taken into account.
Very interesting. You said something earlier, which I wanted to ask you about. You said typically like personal next of kin are notified, right? Are the ones that are handling this document. And then typically you said it's given to like another colleague who would essentially take over. So is it always like a mental health provider that takes over?
So this is a really important issue. Who is going to do this for you? And I think that is the biggest stumbling block that people encounter and why they don't actually make a will. Who is going to manage your entire practice for you? It's a lot of work. So the history of this is when we all only practiced in offices and had paper charts and paper calendars, it was typically, if you were going to name someone, it would be your colleague next door, because somebody had to come into your office and find your paper schedule and go through the files to find the list. So when this was born, like in the late 80s, the idea of covering for one another in this way, it really was typically a closer colleague. But it is not spelled out in most laws that it must be. And so what happens is, if people don't name a colleague, it falls to your next of kin. They inherit your practice and all your problems. And they are the ones who are checking the voicemail and getting the messages from your clients. And they are the ones who, you know, they want in good, you know, faith to kind of help the people that they know you cared about. But it's a terrible position for them to be in. They're not clinicians. They're violating confidentiality. They don't know how to, you know, gather referrals or information. They don't know what to do about the records. What happens sometimes are major breaches of confidentiality, where a widow told me, put a box of records on the curb, and a storm came and they blew around the neighborhood, and confidential material is all over the place, and there was a board complaint filed. So if you don't spell it out, someone who doesn't know what to do may be left trying to figure it out. Some states do specify, like Oregon is leading in this. They do specify Oregon licensed psychologists must name a fellow Oregon licensed psychologist to be the practice executor. Other states just say it must be a licensed clinician, which is still really good. And some states, again, say nothing and it falls, you know, through the cracks.
Hey, Hey, it's Melvin. I hope you're enjoying today's podcast. If you're in private practice, you've probably felt the ups and downs. Some months are full, others are quiet. One simple way to stabilize things, keep your private pay practice, but just add one insurance panel. Not all of them, just the highest paying one that's in your area. That way you still have freedom, but you're not fully dependent upon referrals. That's where Alma really helps. They make it easy to accept insurance, handle all the administrative work, and keep things running smoothly. And just for STC listeners, you can try it absolutely free for 2 months. Just go to sellingthecouch.com/Alma and see if it fits your practice. Alma is spelled A-L-M-A. Wow. I don't know if you've gone down this rabbit hole, but why do some states, why are they so general like that? Not even like naming a clinician or, you know, like specifying in that level, because it just seems like logical.
Yeah, it is. It's a problem on a number of levels. One is that clinicians are burdened with so many responsibilities and regulations and licensing issues and things you have, hurdles you have to jump through, that they don't really want to be told by another law, you must do it this way. And so the therapist organizations kind of oppose that because their members don't really want to be told what they have to do. But it is a real issue for the public that results in people, you know, really suffering. Clients can really fall to significant harm, and it damages the reputation of the field when there are these kinds of violations and abandonments. So it really does, I think, serve our interests to have a structure where we have to do this, because none of us really want to. And unless you have to, this is not at the top of your priority list.
Right. Robin, we started talking so professional wills, they definitely make sense if you pass away, right? But what about, how does a professional will apply if you're either trying to retire, winding down your private practice, maybe you want to focus on something else, or if you're trying to sell your practice? I know those are three different scenarios, but I'm curious how that applies.
Yeah, well, let me talk you through that. The most obvious is in the case of a sudden death. Someone needs to notify clients and help them with referrals and take custody of the records and close the practice. There's incapacitation, where you are not capable of fulfilling your professional responsibilities and you don't know how long that's going to last. So that covers kind of the same situation regarding your current clients who need to be notified and provided with coverage and kind of kept, but then the rest of the tasks of closing the practice aren't going to be, done yet, because hopefully you're going to recover. With retirement, and there are a few differences. One is that you yourself are going to communicate to your clients that you are approaching retirement. You are going to facilitate that goodbye with them. You are going to provide them with referrals and help with that transition. And you are going to tell them where they will be able to find their medical records after you retire. And there are different options. Many therapists just keep the medical records themselves and field requests for the years to come that your client will still reach out to you and say, hey, can you send those records to my new therapist? And you have to then be available in that way. Yep. The issues are, depending on where you live and the population of people that you see, records often need to be kept between 5 and 25 years. So if you see young children, it's typically till 18 plus 5 or 7. So it might be until that baby that you saw, our 2-year-old, is 25. For adult clients, it's typically 5 to 7, but some states are a little bit different. So who's going to ensure that you have those regulations met for a very long time to come, when hopefully, you'll be well in your retirement, but that's a long time. So you are obligated to have a plan. So professional wills can help in a number of ways. It can still be the backup plan for, you know, if something were to happen to you during that record retention period, your will can say, I want my personal, you know, representative to contact this colleague who has agreed to take over the record retention for the period remaining.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way. Another way is at the point of retirement, a lot of people say, I'm done. I want to go, you know, or travel the world. I don't want to be available.
Yeah, fielding phone calls.
And so you need to have a plan for who is going to take custody of those records and become what's called the clinical custodian, the record custodian. And then the responsibility is to notify those clients for, you know, where they would be able to find those records in the future. And it might be as simple as, you know, keeping up your voicemail, but changing the messaging to say, you know, this practice has been closed and anyone looking for information or records should contact this person. You know, they just ethically needs to be a way for them to find the information.
Got it. Lavin, I have a few more questions for you. One is, besides not having a professional will, you've worked with a number of clinicians. What's the most common mistake therapists make when it comes to professional wills?
You know, this is so hard. We are only human as therapists too. It's really hard for us to plan and predict what's going to happen beyond the grave. You know, it's a lot of responsibility. But we really do have to think it through. And most people don't. Even if they check the box and say, I did it. They've used a template which is not specific enough for their practice and their circumstances. They might rely on a colleague who later is not available, who has retired, who was their best friend in grad school, but they haven't spoken to in 15 years. You know, people just don't update. They don't keep it current. The same is true with passwords. It's really, you know, someone might have the very best intentions to do all of this for you, but then they can't get into your EHR because can't access the two-factor authentication and your, you know, spouse doesn't know how to get in. I mean, these problems come up that derail whatever good plan you had in your mind. Other people can't read your mind and they do not know how your system works. And so every detail has to be ironclad or it falls apart. And I have heard from just recently, you know, a wife of a therapist who passed away called me and said, the two people who had agreed said they can't do it. They don't have the time. They don't have, they can't take on all the records or call the people. What do I do? These are, you know, significant responsibilities that we tend to minimize.
You said, I wanted to go back actually before I ask this last question. Selling your practice, if you sell, is there any changes to the professional will part of it?
Yeah, so selling is a trickier beast, you know, and especially having a plan in place to sell your practice if you were to pass away before it's sold and then your estate is responsible for selling your practice. You really have to think through that and line that up with a business attorney or a broker. That is pretty separate from your professional will. But what the professional will can do is help keep the practice steady in the meantime so that your next of kin, your estate, has some time between this crisis and figuring out how to deal with it and what happens next. So the professional will can specify, okay, name this staff member to step up to be, you know, the associate director who will then do payroll and who will supervise my unlicensed folks and who will do all of these things so the practice can keep running. And the professional, the practice executor may be the one, you know, if the owner doesn't want that person while they're living and functioning normally to have access to payroll or the bank accounts or whatever, they might tell the practice executor, okay, here's the information that you would then pass on to that person if something happened to me. And here's what I would want them to do. So thinking about all the what ifs to ensure that your practice would be stable and you know, sellable if there needed to be a period of time after a crisis to kind of regain footing and figure out what to do.
Yeah. Ramani, as you were even talking, like, I keep thinking, like, there needs to be, like, multiple pressure tests of the system, right? Like, it can't just, like, abstractly write it down and then, like, the first exposure to that system is when, like, you pass, you know?
Well, so this is what I thought about for about 7 years after I had this first experience and thought about, we have to do better. How is it that every therapist is sitting in their own office trying to figure out how to do this themselves and going online to find a template? And it's like a DIY project that has legal and ethical and financial ramifications on your practice, your clients, and your family. Like, that just struck me as kind of absurd. Yeah. You know, we take such careful care of so, you know, all the aspects of our practice and our family. How do we not think about this? Mm. So I did work to create a system that would make sure that each step along the way, the things are specified that would need to be communicated, the access to passwords, the current clients, information about those clients, and what you would want for them, your boundaries, how much information would you want someone to share about your condition to your clients who will be very anxious and stressed and want to know what happened? How do you want someone to handle that? If you don't specify, someone else is going to make those decisions for you. So our process is to lead people through a structured interview that asks every detail about their practice. Do you supervise? Do you do tests? What are your other professional responsibilities in addition to your psychotherapy clients? How do you want all of these pieces handled? How do we get access? We have very clear protocol for making sure we would have the most up-to-date passwords and access to the two-factor authentication without having to bother the family at the time of crisis to find your phone and get the code and all the scrambling chaos that typically ensues. So, you know, and then we are the practice executor, because the biggest problem, as I said, is who's going to do this for you? Even if you have a great will, and even if you paid an attorney $1,500 to make you a great piece of paper, you don't have the person who is going to step up and do this work. So we thought, let's professionalize this. We outsource our social media. We outsource our billing. Why not say, let's turn to an expert? And so we are clinicians who would then step in to do all the things for you and your practice to make sure that, you know, your clients are well cared for. That's our biggest priority.
Yeah. I'm so glad you guys created this, because I think there's such a need for this, you know, and I could see so many of our colleagues just feeling overwhelmed in this whole process. So, Ramana, the last question I had for you was, when should a therapist start thinking about this? I mean, is there like an ideal time to put a professional will in place? Is it like right now? Like what, I mean, just broad, like, starting out in private practice, like certain years in, you know, is it an age thing? Like what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The moment you hang your shingle, you should have a backup plan. This is as important as your malpractice insurance, as important as, you know, all the other boundaries that you put in place to ensure, you know, confidentiality and protection of your clients, all the training you invest in taking good care of them. This can be a major trauma. I like to say, you know, we can't prevent loss, of course, we're only human, but we can prevent traumatic loss. And that is our ethical responsibility to put in place how to protect the people who we earn our living off of, the relationship that we facilitate and encourage with them. And so what do we owe them? I mean, that's an important question that, you know, I think we have to sit with. And though this is hard and no one wants to think about it, you know, we need to, and we have that responsibility. So I would say, when you first start your practice, if you didn't do it then, do it now. I can't tell you how many people say, I've been meaning to do that for 15 years. Hmm. And I think as a field, we collude with one another to say like, oh yeah, I know, me too. And yes. Haha. It's not funny until, you know, the crisis happens, even though we're all well defended against that. It won't happen to me. I'm young. I'm healthy. I can't tell you how many 80-year-olds have told me I'm young and healthy. I don't need to worry about this yet. Hmm. And my young and healthy and beautiful, vibrant, vital 49-year-old friend who died in a matter of weeks, you know, certainly never expected that this was on the radar.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing, first of all, like your story and what motivated you to this. And thank you for sharing such great information. Where can we learn more about TheraClosure, about the work that you're doing? And if you can even just tell us some of this awesome stuff you do within TheraClosure.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, we are at TheraClosure.com. And we have a lot of resources on our website. You can also go to theraclosure.com/references, which is not, you can't get there directly from our website. But if your listeners want to go, there is a tremendous list of writing, some papers that I've published, but a whole long list of references and accounts. There's some media articles. The New York Times did a great piece on this last July, highlighting the impact on patients when their therapist passes away and how terrible and painful that is for them. And we were mentioned in there, which was super exciting for us. So there are lots of resources that I encourage people to, you know, take a look at, including some templates that just maybe as an example rather than as, you know, a how-to, but to start you thinking on what you need to protect.
Awesome. Robin, thank you again for just such great information. I'm really glad we've been able to connect, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much, Mel. It's awesome to be here.
Hi there. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Robin, and especially if you've been curious about professional wills, how to navigate them, whether I need one in place, when do I go about this whole process? I hope that today's session has just been incredibly helpful for you. This was such a great conversation, one helpful for me because, again, I feel like many of us, we talk about private practice, right? And even there's so much conversation on marketing your practice, growing your practice. There's not a lot of conversation on what happens if you pass away and what happens to your clients and what happens to your medical records, who accesses your medical records, what does all of that entail? I don't know. I think this is just one of those really practical conversations. I don't know that I have anything like particularly insightful to add, but I think my biggest encouragement for you is like, please don't listen to an episode like this and think, okay, that's a really nice thing that I can do tomorrow or, you know, in a few years down the line. Really set an intention to say, hey, in the next like quarter, I'm going to get this into place because I know this might feel really overwhelming or it might, but it's just, I think for the credibility of our profession, I think for the peace of mind of your loved ones, I think all of these things, it's so worth it. So, again, Robin's website is over at theraclosure.com. There's a number of really great resources there. And I hope that you genuinely take this to heart. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you soon. Bye. Hey there, thank you so much for tuning in to today's session. Just wanted to also let you know that we have a free email newsletter that goes out every week. You can download it over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. Basically, that newsletter contains some of the stuff that's happening behind the scenes with STC and also with my life and how I'm balancing and trying to balance being both an entrepreneur as well as building a life around my family and my health as well. And it also contains the latest podcast episode and some of the stuff that I'm doing on LinkedIn, some of the strategies and things that are working for me. And then finally, a brand new section called On Mel's Mind, where I take a video or a book or a blog post or something like that that's inspiring me for that week, and I share how I'm implementing it both in my life and in my business. Again, you can download that over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. And if you are one of the 3,700 colleagues that have been a part of the email newsletter, I so appreciate you, and I'm grateful for your support. We genuinely try to make these helpful, and just based on the data and based on the feedback we're getting, it seems like we're doing a really good job. So appreciate you, and I hope that you have a great day.